And you're very welcome back to Lifeline here on this Monday morning. It's coming up to 10:33. Apologies for the few mistakes I'm making. As I said, you know, with Dublin winning and yesterday I'm going out for maybe one or two too many talking about drinkware and a bit tongue-tied this morning. Anyway, I'm joined now in the studio by Sean Daly, who is a councillor. And Sean, you're very welcome to Near FM.
Thank you, Debbie.
Now, Sean, we're going to talk a little bit this morning about CBT. Can you just tell people out there exactly what that is?
Well, CBT stands for Cognitive Behavioural Therapy. The cognitive bit refers to our cognitions and the way we think, the way we interpret and put meaning on the world around us. The inner conversations we have when thinking about what someone said or did or what someone didn't say or didn't do. We are forever writing scripts on our heads, imagining what should or shouldn't be. And we would call that the tyranny of the shoulds. The behaviour bit refers to our responses and actions we take on the basis of those interpretations. For example, if you're driving into work and some guy overtakes you on the inside in the bus lane, and 5 minutes later an ambulance passes you in the bus lane, while both these events are very similar, that is, someone overtaking you in the bus lane, your interpretations of that event are very different. You hope and trust that the ambulance will get there in time, and you hope that the car driver will be stopped by the Gardaí. In reality, we have no idea, really, why either driver is using the bus lane. So we proceed to fantasise and to imagine and to write scripts according to how we perceive our unique world. In other words, each of us has a unique, highly personal view of the world as we perceive it to be.
OK, so cognitive behaviour therapy, who does it work on? Is it people who suffer with certain anxieties?
Well, CBT is not for everyone. For example, in grieving or loss of a loved one, or someone who has been to therapy before and wishes to go on to on a conscious level and work from a Freudian perspective. CBT can be seen as rather quick, overly simplistic or cold, and there may be pressure to show results sooner rather than later. Like, one of the main problems in getting the client to do the homework is that's one of the main problems. Some people don't like homework. It may remind them of doing homework in school, or there may be privacy issues at home. It may not always be possible to rigorously fill out daily schedules or worksheets or negative thought records that require coming up with alternative counterstatements to a mistaken belief.
And, okay, so if there's somebody listening this morning, Sean, and they suffer with some form of anxiety, they've been to the doctor and the doctor's recommended to go and go for cognitive behaviour therapy. What happens in the first session? Is it a one-to-one or is it a group session?
It's a one-to-one session, and where we look ask the client to give an autobiography of their life history, see where they're coming from, look at their life experiences, early life experiences.
So if someone suffers with panic attacks, we were talking a little bit off air about that, how would you help somebody through a panic attack?
Well, from a CBT point of view, panic attack, knowledge is, to my mind, the antidote to anxiety and depression. So from a CBT point of view, we would be looking at and explaining where a panic attack comes from, how it arises, the physical changes in the body and the mental processes that have been brought to bear on an interpretation of the events that they're being subjected to.
Okay, so someone's experiencing a panic attack. We've done a lot of interviews here on anxiety and panic attacks and depression. That's what we do a lot on Lifeline. We've been told it will never physically harm you. So I know that's probably one of the biggest fear of the person who's experiencing a panic attack. They're either going to have a heart attack or it's going to physically kill them. But really, a panic attack is it's your mind controlling what's happening in your body, is it?
It is, yeah. A panic attack is really an inadvertent release of neurotransmitters to a perceived threat that doesn't really exist. Your brain cannot tell the difference between a physical threat and a psychological threat. So your body responses are the same. The fight or flight situation comes to forward. The adrenaline, the norepinephrine, the cortisol is released into your system and you think you're going to go mad. And the tendency is to get out of that situation as quickly as you can. And when we do that, when we're actually running away from the situation, and the ideal situation is to try and stay where we are and to listen to our body and say, well, all I'm experiencing now is a release of adrenaline into my system. When I feel butterflies in my stomach or stomach churning, that's a release of cortisol, which is a stress hormone. And if we were to listen to our bodies and we start to feel this business in our tummy, the ideal situation would be to look around and say, well, where is this coming from? And once we step back and ask ourselves where it's coming from, we can look at the situation and say, well, okay, this is what's happening here. This is why I feel my stomach is turning, and really all it is cortisol. So now that you know that, you can look around and say, what is triggering these other thought processes? And you start to feel uncomfortable. And when you see what's triggering them, then you can start to detach yourself from it and slowly talk yourself down and say, well, all that's happening now is I need to get the adrenaline and the noradrenaline reduced. And by doing that, you're removing yourself from what's going on around you.
It's a vicious circle,
yeah. And you're distracting yourself from it. And if you could do that on a continuous basis, well, then you eventually will start to, your anxiety will start to come back to a more normal situation.
It'll always come down.
It'll always come down.
Sometimes you probably think you're at the height of it, and as you say, it's like butterflies in your stomach. You're releasing adrenaline. So if anyone, if you do have, say, like you do have a fright or a dog is chasing you, will get that fear in you that you have to run. But if you stay in the one position, probably focus on something. I'm not qualified. I'm just from other people I've interviewed, it'll always reduce. You're never going to go mad. You're never going to do these things you think you are. You faint or have a heart attack or lose your mind. It'll always reduce.
Absolutely. A panic attack is, if you start to have your panic attack, you can look at your watch and say, okay, now it's 5 to 11. At 25 past 11, 20 past 11, your panic attack is over. It's gone, give or take a few minutes. Because it's like if you spill a glass of water or a glass of milk, you won't have any more milk or water until you refill that glass. Mm. And it's the same with the neurotransmitters. Once you have your panic attack, you've spent all those neurotransmitters. And after such times as your body starts to build them up again, well, then you're not going to have another panic attack. So you won't have two back-to-back. And so if you have a look at your watch and say, well, this is going to be over in 20, 25 minutes, that puts you back in control of it, and it allows you to distract yourself a bit from what's going on around you.
But it must be quite distressing for people who experience a lot of these. Is there a way, a true cognitive behaviour therapy, you can just stop feeling this way? It's training your brain, isn't it?
That's exactly where you brought yourself to this situation. You have brought yourself to this place. No one else has brought you to it by your interpretations of the world. So our job would be it's like a lasagna. You put down different layers of memories, and this is how you normally behave. And your job in psychotherapy is to introduce new ways of thinking, new layers of approaching and new interpretations of that event. And that's what restructuring is all about.
Okay.
And that's where CBT comes to the fore. It allows you to step back and say, well, where's the evidence for this?
Yeah.
Where's the evidence for it? And by drilling down, sometimes you'd write, I'm a useless person. These be only your thoughts in company, and you start to get anxious about it. So in a cognitive behaviour therapy, you'd have a blank sheet of paper, and you'd cross the top, you'd write your statement, I'm a useless person, or I'm bored, I'm boring. And you draw a line down the middle of the page. On the left, you write the evidence for and the evidence against. Mm. And that way you can begin to see the mistaken beliefs that you have about yourself. And then restructure that and review it.
Why do you think, Sean, that some people experience these feelings and other people don't?
It goes back to your interpretation of that event. It's when we talk about having a bad experience or a good experience, really what's happening is we're exposed to a particular event, and that event, like death, is totally indiscriminate. Mm. But it's when we put our interpretation and put meaning on it that it becomes an experience for us. That's why you could have, say, two people in the same family who've been reared in the same environment, very similar environment, and they have totally different experiences of it, because each person puts their interpretation and their understanding of it and put meaning to it. And so you could different members of the same family will have a different experience of exactly the same event. That's where one person gets depressed and the other person doesn't get depressed, or one person has serious anxiety issues about it and the other person doesn't. It all comes down to interpretation and perception.
So can you change a person's way of thinking if they're, say, like George in his mid-40s, if he's been thinking that way all along, his whole life, experiencing, say, these panic attacks and they go and they come back, could you change a person's way of thinking if they're, not saying he's old, but if he's that age? But if he's at that age, you know, probably could work better on a younger person, or does it work the same no matter what age?
Well, age is not too irrelevant. We have all our experiences, and the older one gets, the more set we become in our ways, and our belief systems become more entrenched. But as therapists, therapist doesn't fix the person. As the person themselves, they do their own fixing. Our job would be to bring stuff to their awareness. And it's only whenever we bring it to their awareness that they can do anything about it. If we have got core beliefs that are that we believe that, if, depending on how our parents socialised us, we had beliefs that were need to be perfect.
Yeah.
So we would look at it and say, well, where's the proof? Where do you need? How does one need to be perfect? So it's all to do with our, once again, interpretations. And what the client's job then is to do is to. Is to have a look at what issue he wants to address, and then put on the restructuring. And that's where we use daily record sheets, and the person has to keep a record of all the different negative thoughts that he has got.
Okay.
And then later on in the process, when they become familiar with what things that are triggering their anxiety or their depression, well, then they would look at what are counter statements. Because what we have learned to this point in time, we learn through a process of repetition. And so, and if we have to learn new stuff, we have to repeat it and repeat it and repeat it until such times as they will begin to believe it.
Okay, you mentioned homework. So if a client comes to you suffering with anxiety or depression, they go through their life story, I suppose, with yourself. So what homework would they have to do? If they had to go back when they finish the session with you and go through what they spoke with you that day and come back the following week with, like, the homework done, how does that work?
Well, for argument's sake, if a person had anger issues, well, then throughout the week, they would itemise on a daily basis or on an hourly basis what triggered their anger. And so once they develop an awareness of what those triggers are, they would keep a record of it, and then you would look for the evidence, and then you would see if they can come up with a counter statement to the belief that they've got about this particular issue.
All right, so it works for people suffering with depression as well?
It works for people with depression as well, yes, for
the same
process.
Okay, and Sean, are you... Do you work privately, like is it one-to-one or is it a group session, if anyone is interested in getting in contact with you?
I work with low-cost counselling and in a private practice on a one-to-one basis.
Okay, and can you give out a number for people?
Yes, my website, is that what you're looking for?
Yeah.
Yeah, is www.counsellorsean.com.
So say that again,
www.counsellorsean.com.
Okay. And they can get in touch with you. So
yes.
Before we let you go, Sean, could you just describe? I know there's probably people listening here, and they probably are feeling anxious, but they don't know what it is they're actually experiencing. Could you describe what a panic attack is? If someone is going through a panic attack, what it feels like?
What it feels like is it's the same system, the same feeling that if you're getting into a row or into a fight, it's the sweaty hands, the toes making fists in your shoes, the thumping heartbeat, you think you're going to have a heart attack, you think you're going to lose your mind. And once again, when you this feeling really is the feeling that's in your body, the physiological feeling is that's the neurotransmitters that's gone through your system, and then your mind just takes control. The part of your brain that comes into the fore is the emotional brain, and you then, whenever that takes over, all you want to do is to run, freeze, or fight, whatever the case may be. And with the emotional brain taking over, you've lost access to the senior executive, the new part of your brain that is the rational part of your brain. And until such times as you can bring yourself back into awareness by breathing exercises, and that breathing exercise brings the senior executive part of your brain into play. One of the biggest things to take away from today would be that breathing exercise. There's a very simple breathing exercise which fools your nervous system into thinking that the panic is over, and this is really important. It brings back, it brings your the rational brain into dominance over the emotional brain.
Okay.
And that breathing exercise is really very simple. You breathe in for 5 seconds and out for 7, or in for 9 and out for 11. The most important part about it is to breathe out longer than you breathe in.
Okay.
Because what happens there, and the biological thing is that it takes the parasympathetic nervous system into dominance and puts the sympathetic nervous system, which is giving you all that adrenaline, all that norepinephrine and cortisol, it puts it back into secondary position.
Okay, so that's a tip to...
That'd be the tip for today, yes.
A tip for today, if you're going to experience a panic attack, breathe in for 5 seconds and breathe out for 7 or 9.
Yes.
Breathe out more. Okay, so before we let you go, the web address again is...
www.counselorsean.com.
Brilliant. Okay, Sean, listen, thanks for talking to us this morning here on Lifeline. It was very interesting. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you for having me, Debbie. Thank you very much.
And you're very welcome back to Lifeline. Thanks to Sean just for talking to us there before that piece of music about cognitive behaviour therapy. And his number, if you want to give him a ring, is 087 1655673. That's 087 1655673, if you want to book a session with Councillor Sean Daly.
Is there anything you can do, Sean, to help people who forget people's names? Oh, no, yeah, I'm on, yeah. I'm supposed to be on.
You're supposed to be on. No, Sean, before we go, I'm dreadful at names. I call John George every day. See, there you go. What's wrong with me?
It's because you have a switch here in your shoulder and it switches on and it's me, me, me.
That's true.
It's all about me. And what you're trying to do there is to make an interpretation or not make an impression on the other person. And so you're not taking on board their name.
Really?
Yeah, that's what's happening.
Really? No, are you serious?
Yes, yeah.
Because I'm a very selfish person. It's all about me.
It's not that we're selfish persons. No, it's because we feel self-conscious and we're putting ourselves out there all the time.
Oh, right. That's what it is. Mm. So when I'm at home calling my kids the dog's name and everything, what's that?
It's because I remember reading somewhere, very nice, and I keep dogs. I have Japanese Spitz. They're pristine white and they've black eyes. And when they look into your eye, they just say, Sean, it's okay to be you.
Just can't get names. I was okay until I started working on the radio, and George could be Mary tomorrow. I'm absolutely useless.
I think that explains it exactly. It's because you're working on the radio and you've got to sell yourself, you've got to present yourself and put the best foot forward. So it's all about me. And we're not...
Okay, well, because it's all about me, I'm going to finish off for another track. And Sean, you will join us again in the next couple of weeks. We're going to do an update every 4 or 5 weeks, okay?
Okay, I look forward to it.
On different topics. Like today, we kind of focused on panic attacks. Maybe next time, maybe insomnia, maybe a bit of depression. Because as we know, in the times we're in, a lot of people are suffering from stress. And we know from stress, anxiety, depression develops a lot. So the next time, we'll probably focus a little bit on that. Is that okay?
I look forward to it.
Brilliant.